This is special hurricane coverage from public radio stations around the state, WHQR in Wilmington, WFAE in Charlotte, WFSS in Fayetteville, Blue Ridge Public Radio in Asheville, and WUNC in Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacio in Durham, and we're taking your calls and your questions about Hurricane Florence, also keeping you up to date on the latest developments. So for those stories and for your questions, call us at 877-962-9862. You can send us an email at sot@wunc.org. Our hashtag is SOTLive if you want to send us a tweet. Let's go now to the National Weather Service in Raleigh. Meteorologist James Morrow is with us. Welcome, James.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Tell us the latest. Where is this storm now, and what has it done this day in the state of North Carolina?
Yeah, so the storm is now a tropical depression, and it's now actually the center of it, or what is left of the center of it, is located over the Ohio Valley. So we finally got a little bit of movement with this storm that for two or three days sat just south of us, giving us an unprecedented amount of rainfall.
And what kind of rains have we seen? Do you have any kind of rainfall totals at this point?
Yeah, so across the triangle, we saw anywhere from 6 to 10 inches. That 6 amount may be a little bit further north toward the Durham area, and then the 10-inch amounts maybe on the southern end of the triangle. That's only a drop in the bucket, no pun intended, compared to what some of those that are along the North Carolina-South Carolina border saw.
Right, and the worst is not over. I mean, the fact is maybe the clouds have more or less moved on, but the rain remains on the ground and swelling these rivers. So what can we expect across the state in terms of flooding now in the next couple of days?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, we do have some precipitation that's possible over the next 24 hours or so. So any additional rainfall is going to cause some significant issues because we just cannot handle the water. And the water that's already on the ground has to go somewhere. So all that eventually rushes to the rivers, makes the river swell. And a lot of area rivers are actually expected to crest in the moderate to major flood stage category. So we're talking potentially life-threatening flooding for the next 24 hours, really, and it could last for weeks, especially across parts of the coastal plains like Goldsboro and parts of Sampson County that could see these river levels staying above flood stage for weeks at a time.
Yeah, and, we've certainly been focused on Florence, but as a forecaster, what's behind this? Do we have a little bit of sunshine over the next couple of days, or what's behind this?
Yeah, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. I'm looking out the window, and I see our first glimpse of sunshine. We've seen that for the first time today. And that actually may be some bad news for us today because we still have that very moist air mass in place. You can kind of feel the humidity once you step outside. And unfortunately, that means there's going to be a chance for some scattered showers and storms this afternoon, which could enhance the flooding rain threat as we go forward. But as we progress into Wednesday, we should start drying out and actually have a 2 to 3 day period where we'll be warm, but we'll also be dry. So we'll be thankful for that. And the key will be just to make sure we don't get too hot, because if people don't have air conditioning, it may get a little brutal and very humid over the next 3 or 4 days.
All right. James Morrow is a meteorologist for the National Weather Service in Raleigh. James, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Let's move out to New Bern now. Allison Roat is a resident of New Bern and stayed home during the flooding. She's there now. Allison, welcome.
Hi, Frank.
What's going on with you in New Bern? Tell us about your situation. Do you have power? What's happening with you?
We got power back on Saturday, and I just got to tip my hat to the city of New Bern because I had no idea we would get power back that quickly. It was really fantastic because it was hot, and so we had gone 30 hours without power, and the house was pretty hot for sleeping and that kind of thing. But they got us restored. Craven County, where I live, was under a mandatory evacuation. And we were going to evacuate, and at that time it was Category 4, and I know the mayor said, forget the category, it's a surge, but we looked at the surge as well. We were going to evacuate due to wind. The National Hurricane Center had a great map, inundation map, and we were able to superimpose that with the location of our house, and we were just like, I think we can take a 10 and possibly 12 foot surge and still stay dry. So we did hunker down, and logistically leaving was going to be very difficult because we knew it would be very hard to get home. And we have three slightly feral cats who hate each other that we would have had to bring with us. And so staying was the right decision for us, but I certainly know in Riverbend, where a previous caller had called, it was a red zone that would have been, you know, you got to leave. And I have friends in the historic area of New Bern that had a lot of water damage. And right now, my husband, who recently retired, thank goodness, he's got lots of time right now. He's helping people clean up. We've got a lot of debris, but we managed through it all right. From my front door, there's a house I can look at that's got a tree through it. I live in Trent Woods along the Trent River. I'm about 0.8 miles just up from the Trent River. And right now, the concern, of course, is that inland water coming down and the crest, which we've told is around September 20th. So they still have mandatory evacuation for Craven County until then, I think the 21st. So it's not over, but I think we'll still stay dry. We've run out of milk, and so we have to now drink black coffee. I mean, is that, I guess it's a first world problem.
Well, Allison, I want to thank you. It sounds like you've weathered this pretty well, and I want to thank you for your story because I think it points to something very important about why people stay, and I think it gives some credibility to that, even though it's always dangerous. And of course, public safety officials, you know, urge the other way. But I think there's a way in which we have to understand all of the decisions and how difficult these decisions are. So thank you for joining us and sharing your story.
Thanks, Frank.
Allison Rowat is a resident of New Bern who stayed home during the flooding. Her power is back on. She seems to be doing pretty well. Let's go now to Greenville. Mary is on the line with us, and she also sat it out. Hello, Mary.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing? What's your situation right now?
Well, I live in the middle of Greenville at a high elevation, and thankfully our drainage system was working very well. So around the apartment, we had a few limbs falling here and there, but no flooding other than a little leak above the window. But what's really been bothering me, I have a lot of friends and family across eastern North Carolina. Some of them are stranded in Tennessee and South Carolina because they can't get back home. You've got some people who their houses have flooded, their cars have damaged. And yet, I still see a lot of posts coming about of, oh, was that supposed to be a storm? And complaining because our area didn't have such a massive impact as people were anticipating.
Mm. So it's a kind of storm envy. People are saying, you know, we got it worse than you, or you didn't get it bad enough. That's what you're saying?
It's mainly the locals who are saying, oh, was that supposed to be a hurricane? And complaining because of the lack of so-called excitement from the storm.
Wow. And in your situation right now, do you have power?
Yes, thankfully our power did not go off. It flickered a few times, but we were able to stay cool and up to date with everything that was going on.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
This is special live coverage, public radio stations around the state bringing you this special coverage. WHQR in Wilmington, WFAE in Charlotte, WFSS in Fayetteville, Blue Ridge Public Radio in Asheville, and WUNC in Chapel Hill, all bringing you statewide coverage. Lonnie Crum is with us, a licensed professional counselor and assistant professor in the College of Education at East Carolina University. There's an interesting problem or issue that Mary raises, which is that for some people this can be exciting and perhaps not exciting enough. Have you seen anything like that before?
Right. I did hear that. And yes, Frank, that is new to me, as in I guess it did not, you know, reach what they're expected of this storm. But I do have a solution for that I have seen. There are local churches, particularly in the areas that were not impacted, that are collecting the items, because what maybe the people are experiencing is that they were preventative. They went to the local grocers and the stores and they stocked up on water and cleaning supplies, and now that they have much of these things, they don't know what to do with them. But I suggested they donate them and drop them off to the shelters, and they can transport them to different areas such as the New Bern, the Jacksonville areas, to places that need them. So if there are any listeners that do feel themselves that they are overprepared for the situation and weren't hit by the storm or affected as bad, think about donating those items to places that may need them.
Sarah Kirby is also still with us, a state program leader for family and consumer sciences and a professor for North Carolina State University. Pretty soon now, people are going to start thinking about going back. We talked to one listener who is heading back to our home. What should we be thinking about if we're going back to a home that may have been affected by flooding?
Well, we mentioned earlier just the fact that you might be a little bit overwhelmed. But the first thing you need to do is, once you're allowed back in, is really take a good assessment of that house. First, make sure, though, that you're protected, that you have all the protection that you need, so that you have boots and gloves and goggles and all the things to make sure that nothing's going to happen to you if you enter that home. But the second thing is really to take an assessment, walk around the house, see what's there. Is it still on its foundation? Is it cracks in the stairs, or is the roof sagging or walls leaning? Because you certainly don't want to enter a house that has issues. You know, utilities, hopefully they're off. You don't want to enter a house still has the electricity on as well. And, you know, when you go in, think about the fact you were displaced, and so other things are displaced, like snakes and rodents, and, you know, you might...
The odd alligator.
Technically, that's what I was going to say. You might find an alligator sitting in there.
But. Well, we have more tips, too, things to do and things to prepare for, and more stories. 1-877-962-9862 if you want to join our special coverage from public radio stations all across the state. We're talking with Sarah Kirby, who is at North Carolina State, and Lonnie Crum is with us from ECU, and we're taking your phone calls, and we'll also get an update from around the state, talk with reporters all around to follow Florence on this program. Please stay with us. This is special hurricane coverage from public radio stations around the state. WHQR in Wilmington, WFAE in Charlotte, WFSS in Fayetteville, Blue Ridge Public Radio in Asheville, and WUNC in Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacio in Durham, and we're taking calls and questions about Hurricane Florence. We're also keeping you up to date on the latest developments. To call us, you can dial 877-962-9862. We also have an email address, sot@wunc.org, and you can tweet us at #SOTLive. Joining us now is WUNC Managing Editor Dave DeWitt. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Frank.
So what are the latest conditions? Can you bring us up to date on the statistics and the numbers? What do we know about this hurricane, or now a tropical depression?
Well, there are 17 confirmed deaths across the state of North Carolina. Of course, that's the most tragic situation, and that number is expected to rise as the day goes along. Search and rescue operations are ongoing now, and as they uncover people in various situations, they are taking them to shelters and taking them to safety. About 14,000 people are in 110 shelters across the state. That's down from a high of about 22,000 or a little bit more. They have already rescued 2,600 people and 300 animals from flooded areas. And 18 total counties in North Carolina are now federal disaster areas. They added a few this morning, including Bladen, Columbus, Cumberland, Duplin, Lenoir, Jones, Wayne, and Robeson. The ongoing situation, Wilmington is still closed over land. The NC State Emergency Response Team provided 23 truckloads of meals ready to eat and bottled water to Wilmington overnight. As they uncover things as they go across the state, one of the things that they found about a day and a half ago, the Sutton Steam Plant, located between the Cape Fear and Northeast Cape Fear River, had a coal ash pond breach. It went into the cooling pond, and they're trying to assess the situation there.
We're also hearing a little bit about hog lagoons and possible breaches there or overflows from hog lagoons. Do we have any confirmations yet?
Yeah, there seems to have been one hog lagoon reported to have breached in Duplin County. Of course, Duplin County is sort of on the just north of Wilmington, right along I-40 there. More hogs than people is one of their things that they like to boast about. According to DEQ Secretary Michael Regan, they're assessing that situation. Most hog farms across the state sprayed out and said they could take up to 4.5 or 5 feet of water Many areas got more than that. So the expectation is there will be more situations like that. But right now, there's just the one Hog Lagoon that was breached in Duplin County.
And I think we'd be remiss if we didn't point out that when you say spray out, which is to reduce the overall level of the lagoon, that just takes the contents of that lagoon, sprays it on top, and then when it rains, it ends up about in the same place. So I think that's something that we need to always point out when we talk about that. Dave DeWitt, thank you so much for joining us, Managing Editor at WUNC.
Of course. Thank you.
Let's go now. FEMA is, of course, very busy right now, along with the state preparedness individuals, and people are doing rescue operations around the state of North Carolina. Let's talk to John Mills now, who is a spokesman at FEMA. Hello, John.
Hi, Frank. Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Tell us the situation now. What are you all dealing with at this moment?
I'm located at Fort Bragg at the Emergency Operations Center. FEMA is here at the request of the state. The governor and state emergency management are in the lead. FEMA is here in a support role. We have a lot of people at the State Emergency Operations Center in Raleigh. We're coordinating across the entire federal government and the private sector for rescues, mass care, transportation, and infrastructure support. It's a very large operation. It's a complicated response, given that the water is still rising in some areas and is expected to stay up for some time, especially in eastern and southeastern North Carolina. So people need to be ready for that. The good news is we're down in power outages from about 880,000 customers down to about 465,000, according to some of the latest reports. So that's the good news. The bad news is this disaster is not over. It's going to go on for a while for a lot of people.
What are the particular areas or the most urgent needs right now, areas that have your most urgent attention?
It's a lot of what you've already been reporting. We were able to get, your managing editor reported, that some truckloads of supplies were able to get into Wilmington. My understanding is that some of the supplies that FEMA was coordinating did have to take kind of a roundabout route to get in there, and that New Hanover County Emergency Management will be making some announcements about where points of distribution will be set up. And all around the state, for other reporters who are covering this, a lot of your best information when covering this is going to come from your county emergency management officials, those local officials who are on the ground, who know their communities best, are going to know where various points of distribution for commodities are going. FEMA also has more than 15 urban search and rescue teams right now, mostly in eastern North Carolina. Those teams have already conducted more than 800 rescues or evacuations. The National Guard and DHS Coast Guard also have swift water rescue teams in the hard-hit areas conducting those operations. We would really strongly advise folks right now to listen to their local officials, follow their directions. This dangerous flooding continues, and I know people want to return home, and there's probably some level of frustration. That's totally understandable, but please do not try to return home until local authorities say it is safe to do so. Many of the counties have community information lines already established, and for the media, they have joint information center lines established. You can sign up for their news releases from some of those counties to get those local-level updates. So those can be very helpful for people. When the counties and the local governments need something and they don't have it, they're making those requests through state emergency management, which will try to fulfill the request. If the state needs additional assistance, state emergency management reach out to FEMA for federal assistance. And FEMA coordinates across the entire federal government, the private sector, and among charitable, nonprofit, and faith-based organizations to try to meet those needs. As one example of that, what you're going to be seeing in eastern North Carolina are feeding centers set up by a number of organizations. One of them that's well-known in disaster response are the Southern Baptists, who are setting up to provide many, many thousands of meals every day. And your first source to hear about that is going to be the state or local officials, and FEMA will also help amplify some of that information when I get more details about that.
All right, John.
Please keep in mind, you know, many of these roads are still closed and it's still very dangerous for a lot of people.
Yeah, very important. And to repeat what you just said, for the most accurate information about your situation wherever you are, it's probably your county government that has the best and most up-to-date information. Did I hear you say that?
Yes, I would suggest that because they're right there on the ground. They're getting the 911 calls. They're getting calls into their emergency operations center at the city and county level, and any requests that they can't meet, they're sending those requests to the state. So a lot of people around the state are calling 911 only in emergency situations, but a lot of the counties do have lines where people can call to request information, like a community information line. So in any of the cities and counties around the state, where you can hear this, what I would suggest is getting in touch with your local officials, and that goes for the reporters who are covering the story as well. That's going to be the best way for you to find out what's going on. As an example, the FEMA urban search and rescue teams and including DHS Coast Guard teams are working under the direction of the local authorities, in many cases the local fire departments. So where those teams are going, they're going there at the direction of those local officials in support of the state of North Carolina.
All right. John Mills is a spokesperson for FEMA. That's, of course, the Federal Disaster Relief Agency. John, thank you so much for talking with us.
Frank, thank you very much, and please stay in touch.
Will do. We will now get down to Wilmington, WHQR in Wilmington, where reporters Vince Winkle and news director Rachel Lewis-Hilburn have been working and living at that station to provide coverage on the conditions in Wilmington. Vince and Rachel, welcome. We'll check in with Vince and Rachel in just a minute at WHQR to find out what's going on down there. Right now, let's go to the phones. We're taking your phone calls at 877-962-9862. Penny is in Wilmington now and joins us on the line. Hello, Penny.
Hello.
How are things in Wilmington where you are?
Well, where I am is not too bad. I'm in what's called the Monkey Junction area, which has power, and my place is okay, but lots of places aren't. There's no power in most of the city. I don't have power at home or in most neighborhoods here. But I'm concerned what I did not see was very good preparedness. And, you know, during the storm, people are saying, don't call 911 unless it's life-threatening. Well, yeah, that's good, except there wasn't really an alternative. The county emergency line went down, and there was very little alternative if you had issues. I mean, when people's roofs are leaking, and there should be some kind of response to try to get tarps around to places and save people's homes. The gas stations are out of gas. They almost shut down the water supply here because they didn't have the fuel to keep it running. The stores that have opened are running out of food. Well, why would there not be stuff in place for all of that? The roads to Wilmington are flooded. What a shock.
Yeah, well, I guess in these emergencies you can only prepare so much, and you know, I'm sure that there's a way to look back at this and find out ways to do it better. Are you in a situation now where do you have power and do you have food?
I don't have power, no, but yeah. I have food and water. I'm fine, but I see the emergencies around. I know that there are people that do need to get food. There's no food that, you know, there's no meals being done anywhere that I've heard of for people. There's very few stores open, and the ones that are, you know, it was an hour late wait outside the Walmart to get in and get anything.
All right, well,
and
Penny,
then they're being cleaned out.
Right. No, it's hard to get stuff in there. Penny, thank you so much for your call.
You bring it in advance.
Yeah.
All right. What was in there was in the store. That's what was there. And what's in the stores was what's there. There's no backup.
Penny, thank you so much. Penny calling from Wilmington. And, of course, now the city is cut off. We're hearing that some supplies are getting through. At WHQR in Wilmington, Vince Winkle and news director Rachel Lewis-Hilburn have been at the station doing the reporting throughout, and they join us now. Welcome.
Hi, Frank.
Thanks, Frank.
Rachel, how are you doing? Are you there?
Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
How are you doing right now? I'll ask Vince the same question in a minute.
I think I'm doing just fine. The fact is we have no air conditioning. We haven't actually showered in several days. But we have water, we have food, we have shelter, and we have air mattresses and sleeping bags.
And what's the situation, Rachel? I'll stick with you. What are you seeing and what's happening in Wilmington right now?
Well, right now there are a lot of people who've been without power for 5 days, charging cell phones, losing refrigerators, having enough gas. That's been the big challenge. People, I think, are getting cabin fever. People have been going out despite officials urging people to stay home and stay off the roads because we're still dealing with hazardous road conditions. And as you said before, I think about 20 trucks from Fort Bragg were able to get into Wilmington last night with some meals ready to eat and water and other necessities. And they're going to set up those distribution points relatively soon, we hope. But people are champing at the bit to get out.
Vince, we've been talking with you as well throughout. I wonder if you can give us a sense of how things have changed since Friday when we first spoke with you.
Well, of course, Friday is when the big winds came through and the heavy rain, and everyone that hadn't evacuated hunkered down and rode this thing out. Now we're, of course, for example, yesterday the Cape Fear River, which is a block away from the station, was about 2 or 3 feet higher than it was this morning. But that is not really reassuring because of all the water we're expected to come back from the heavy rains in the central part of the state. So while the weather is fair today and it seems to create a false sense of security, I think people still need to be aware that the rivers and the creeks and the tributaries could still do some flooding, and there still could be flash flooding in this part of the state.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm sitting here in the Piedmont in the Triangle area, and I will tell you that we had quite a bit of rain today, an awful lot, more than I've ever seen, and that is all coming your way. So there is more to come. Rachel, let me ask you this. You heard Penny just a minute ago express her frustration. For those of us who were not in the eye of the storm and didn't bear the brunt of it, we might hear something like that and say, you know, you didn't have enough, you weren't ready enough, and think, well, you know, this is an emergency situation. How does one ever prepare for this? But it was a voice of frustration for someone who has really been at the center of this. And I wonder if you're seeing that. I know you've been reporting on residents and the tensions that might be now starting to flare as this storm just churns on and on.
That is a factor here. We're hearing county officials actually say, everybody try to remain calm. We know that this situation is stretching people's patience to the breaking point. And I think a lot of people feel for people like Penny. But the fact is, it's still a hazardous situation out there. They are distributing food and water soon, but it's really just, you know, I heard from a county commissioner who said he drove through standing water last night in the city of Wilmington. There was a power line down in that water. No word yet on which lines are active, which lines are not. There is, with this flash flood risk, you know, raging water across certain roadways. So it's just a dicey situation. And as we all know, it's after the storm, the indirect causes that create the more fatalities than the actual storm.
Particularly one that has taken so long to move through and continues to pour rain here and then downstream. I'm wondering, you know, we're hearing a few trucks are getting through, but the city is cut off. This is a hurricane that made landfall on Friday. What are people doing for people to remain in the city? What, are there places for them to go? What's happening to people who must be by now running out of food?
Well, there are some grocery stores that have started to open. I was on the other side of the river this morning, and a couple of large Harris Teeters had opened, and of course you can see the long lines. My son and I drove by a gas station that had just opened, and we measured the line waiting at half a mile of cars that some people were pushing to get gas. So slowly, as power is brought back in small pockets of the city, those businesses are opening and everyone is flocking there. But we have power two blocks away from the radio station, but we don't have power at the radio station.
And Brunswick County Health Services has actually just announced they want to assist food service establishments to reopen, and they're asking for those that serve only pre-prepared foods to go ahead and reopen. So people are trying to find alternative ways of providing supplies to people who can't get them.
Well, and what about the roads? I mean, it's been a while since it rained there, but it's heading back. Can you navigate the roads at this point?
Around the city you can, except for all the trees that have come down and the power lines Rachel mentioned. In our trips yesterday, we were still finding roads blocked off by some substantial trees, a lot of oak trees, but the crews have been working round the clock to cut them up and get them out of the road so that emergency vehicles can navigate the streets. But there's still all these power lines that come down with these trees that are just kind of lying across sidewalks and roadways. And if you're going to go out and venture around, you have to be extremely cautious.
Vince Winkle is a reporter at WHQR in Wilmington. Rachel Lewis-Hilburn is news director at WHQR. Thank you both for your reporting and for this report. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Our live coverage from public radio stations across the state on Hurricane Florence will continue in a few moments, and we're taking your phone calls at 877-962-9862. Stay with us. This is special hurricane coverage from public radio stations around the state, WHQR in Wilmington, WFAE in Charlotte, WFSS in Fayetteville, Blue Ridge Public Radio in Asheville, and WUNC in Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacio in Durham. We're taking your phone calls and your questions about Hurricane Florence. We're also keeping you up to date on the latest developments. Our phone number is 877-962-9862. Our email address is sot@wunc.org, #SOTLive. We're talking about the conditions all around the state, also taking your phone calls this hour at 877-962-9862. Let's go to the phones now where Sandra is on the line. Hello, Sandra.
Hello, good morning. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. Tell us where you are.
I'm near Greenville, North Carolina, in a little town called Chocolonity.
And you're doing relief services, I understand.
I'm sorry, what?
Are you you're involved in relief services? You're the head of Episcopal Relief?
Yes. For a number of years, I was head of Episcopal Relief and Development, which is an international agency responding to hurricanes, many hurricanes in the United States recently.
What are you seeing there, and what are you doing now that this hurricane has struck?
Well, we're very lucky. The only problem that we have right now is that we have no electricity. But fortunately, we have a generator, so we're managing just fine.
What kind of needs are you having to serve? If you're doing relief services, what's happening there, and what are the needs in your community?
There are, I think, few needs in our particular community. We escaped by being pretty much on the edge of the storm. But what I wanted to suggest is a previous caller had mentioned donating unused supplies to shelters and so forth. And that's a very generous and thoughtful idea. But there is a better way, because donating supplies to places like that means that someone has to sort them and box them up and figure out how to get supplies to people who need them, the correct supplies and things like that. A far better way to handle it is to return those unused supplies to where you purchased them. Donate the refund to one of the agencies working, and that could be right now probably the Red Cross, because the Red Cross is the agency that is most responsible for immediate help. And they know where supplies go, what supplies are needed, and have the capability of getting the right supplies to the right people at the right time.
Great, Sandra. Well, thank you for that refinement. We appreciate that call. Thank you, Sandra.
You're welcome.
Sandra is the former head of Episcopal Relief and is called in on our line, 877-962-9862. As Florence dumps rainwater throughout central North Carolina, we're going to head to partner station WFAE in Charlotte. Reporter Steve Harrison is there and joins us now. Welcome, Steve.
Good afternoon.
Tell us what's going on in Charlotte.
Charlotte was really spared a lot of damage and flooding by the storm. I would say most of the city received about 6 to 8 inches of rain in the southeast part of the city. It was a foot of rain. But overall, the city was pretty unscathed. There were some fallen trees. There were I saw one fallen oak tree that smashed a two-story house. But overall, the city itself was in good shape.
And sadly, two deaths, one in Gaston County, right?
That's right. So Gaston is just to the west of Charlotte, and that was in a mobile home where apparently a pine tree, waterlogged pine tree, fell on the mobile home and killed a three-month-old baby.
And a one-year-old in Union County who lost his life as well. Please tell us about him.
That's right. That was yesterday, and apparently the mother and the one-year-old were driving on Highway 218. They approached a barricade. The road was flooded, and there was, I think that's a little bit of confusion whether the barricade was still there or had been moved, but she started driving in the water. Her vehicle got pushed aside. She tried to get out, was able to free the one-year-old, but then lost her grip, and he was swept away.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for your report, Steve Harrison. It talks about how treacherous this storm remains, even though most of the clouds have moved out of the state. Steve Harrison, a reporter from partner station WFAE in Charlotte. Thank you so much, Steve.
Thank you.
Let's go to Lumberton now, where Bill French is there, the director of emergency services for Lumberton. Bill French, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
Emergency services in Lumberton. Tell us what's happening there.
Well, you know, it was nice to wake up to the sun shining not too many clouds in the sky, but it kind of belies the fact that we're still a long way from being where we need to be. One good thing is that the river crested, according to this hydrological report I'm looking at, today at about 12 noon at 25 feet, which is equal to what it was when Matthew came through 2 years ago. And it shows the river falling. It was showing it staying pretty much the same at the last report, but it is only going to be at 21 feet on Saturday at around 12 noon. But, you know, it's better to be dropping than rising.
Right. Forgive me for interrupting. I'm sorry, Bill. What are your greatest needs right now, and what are you addressing immediately?
Well, you know, we're still sort of in the response phase. You know, we're still doing some evacuations. The rescues are pretty much hadn't had. I think we had a couple last night. We've had no loss of life, thank the Lord, and we're okay there. Right now, it's just helping to get supplies coordinated, because once we get to the recovery phase, you know, we're going to have to set up points of distribution and feeding areas and everything. So, you know, we're looking at that. We had an advantage this time that we didn't have during Matthew, where Matthew just came roaring in through an opening that we didn't think water would come through, and it did, and inundated our south and west Lumberton neighborhoods. And it kind of caught us off guard. But this time, you know, we knew that that area would probably do that. We put an earthen dam there to hold it back, and told the people they would be advised to evacuate those areas, and they have. And You know, we did in my 911 center. I'm also the director of the 911 center in Lumberton, and our call volume was nowhere near what it was in Matthew. We took over 1,000 calls the night of the worst of Matthew, and it was hardly any because most people had already left.
Right.
And, you know, we had our rescue units and other entities going and helping to get people to the shelters. There are currently 4 shelters open in the county, about 1,300 people in them right now.
All right.
But the neighborhoods that are still inundated, there, you know, that's the problem.
And, Brad, how much of an area is that? Can you give us a sense of the scope of areas that are still flooded?
I don't know the square miles, but there's one rather large subdivision called Mayfair, and it's right on the edge of a drainage canal and a swamp. And it flooded during Matthew. A lot of people there had repaired and rebuilt their homes. Now it's flooded again. Let me think of another. There's another neighborhood, the Oaks.
Well, we're getting some sense. Yeah, we're getting some sense of that scope. Bill French, thank you so much for talking with us.
Okay, glad to be with you. Thank you.
Bill French is the director of emergency services in Lumberton. Let's go out to Hickory now. Chrissy Becker was evacuated from her home in Jacksonville last week. She was staying with her family at a Best Western in Hickory. She has moved again. And Chrissy is back on the line. We spoke with her on Friday. She's back on the line with us to give us an update. Welcome, Chrissy.
Hi. Thanks for talking to me again. We are actually somewhere in Greensboro, I think.
All right. Are you traveling, or are you parked in Greensboro? Are you going to stay there, or are you on your way home?
We're hoping to get to the Raleigh area tonight. We had, because this is not just an adventure, it's a saga, we had a tire blowout on our trailer. So we stopped on the side of the road, and some lovely NCDOT workers helped us change the tire. And so we're getting some supplies and continuing our journey, but hopefully to make it to the Raleigh area this afternoon.
And the we is you and your two daughters, right?
Yes, my husband, my two daughters, a dog and a cat.
All right. And so what do you hear about your home in Jacksonville?
So we had a neighbor, thankfully, that was able to make it into our neighborhood and took pictures for everybody. And we were spared flooding, amazingly, because about a half a mile on either side of our neighborhood, it's just completely impassable. But our neighborhood made it through without any flooding. My house, my fence is totally gone, and there's roof damage that we can see. So I want to get back home because I want to, you know, take care of my house and mitigate any damage that's going on. But we're just waiting to hear that there's a passable road, you know, back home.
Now, you talked about this with your daughters, and you talked about also, I believe, if I've got this right, you survived typhoons in Japan. Do I have that right? Am I remembering correctly?
Not me. My husband's been stationed in Japan before.
So how are your girls bearing up under all of this, and you for that matter? But this has to be a pretty difficult situation for them. Or is it? Is it an adventure? How are they taking all this?
It's a bit of an adventure. We're trying really hard to make the best of it for them. The people of Hickory have been wonderful. We went to the Catawba Science Center. We've been traveling all over. It's been great. But they want to go home, and my nerves are frayed. Like I said, we've seen pictures of our house. We want to get home. My county colleagues have been working in shelters this last week. I want to get home to help them. You know, so it's every day. It gets a little bit more anxiety, more anxious. Just want to go home.
Well, I hope you get there, and our hearts are with you. Good luck on the rest of this voyage, and thank you for talking with us.
Well, thanks for checking in with me.
Chrissy Becker evacuated her home in Jacksonville. She is on her way back. She spent the better part of this ordeal in Hickory, North Carolina, and is now headed home. Well, I'm joined also on this program by Lonnie Crum, a licensed professional counselor and assistant professor in the College of Education at East Carolina University, specializes in rural public health and mental health. And Lonnie, as you listen to this now, for the better part of 2 hours, we've had people on both giving us updates and the professionals and other people in their homes. What do you make of all this? What are your thoughts as you think about what you've heard over the past couple of hours?
Thanks, Frank. As we end this show, I just want to leave everyone with a couple of resources. What we've heard throughout the show is that before, during, and after the natural disasters, there can be a mix of emotions and behaviors. People have fear, panic, anxiety, sadness. We've heard frustration, shock, and even mere devastation. And we want to encourage people to make sure that they think about the psychological impact that natural disasters may have. And if I would, I want to provide a couple of resources to you all. The first one is a disaster distress helpline. It's operated by SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. And that number for everyone is 1-800-985-5990. And you also can text them, and they will respond. I've actually tried it out since we were on a call, and it took about 2 minutes for them to respond to me. And you text the words "talk with us" to 66746. Again, you text the message "talk with us" to numbers 66746, and that is a disaster distress helpline. They are definitely in place to help residents across the state of North Carolina.
And just to let everybody know, in case you missed that, we're going to post those numbers at our website, stateofthings.org, and then do our best to get our partner stations to post it as well, so that it may be up at those websites. At the public radio station where you're listening, we will certainly have it at stateofthings.org in case you missed it. And other thoughts in the last moment or so, and then I want to talk with Sarah Kirby. Well, let me ask you, Sarah, a state program leader for family and consumer sciences, a professor at North Carolina State. What do you make of this, what you've heard, and, of course, what you've seen over the past several days?
So I've seen a lot of devastation, and I know from my perspective, from a housing-related perspective, people are going to experience a lot of different things. So Chrissy talked about having a roof with a leak. And so the water damage that she's going to deal with, she's dealing with clean water. Clean water is so much easier than flood water, which is full of contaminants and all sorts of things. So when people get back to their homes, that's when they can start thinking about, what do I need to do? What has to be done? If it's flooded, you've got to clean it, or you've got to remove mud and silt and debris. You've got to clean. You've got to dry out. You have to disinfect. You've got a lot of stages involved there that takes a much longer time. If you have a smaller, although still a significant problem, smaller damage such as your roof, then you deal with it a different way. You might be able to cover it with a tarp, maybe deal with a few smaller kinds of issues related to mold and that sort of thing. But you can go on. I think that the most important thing for everybody to recognize is that in addition to the mental health and recovery, recovering your home, recovering your community is going to take time. It takes time to get your house back in order. Everybody is going to be wanting services from contractors and roofers and all kinds of things. So it will take time. You'll have to wait your turn, unfortunately. So if you can be patient, if you can try to make those kinds of improvements that will keep you safe, keep your house at least protected, then you'll do well.
Can
I mention three resources? There are three resources I'd like to talk about real quick. One is our website, ncdisaster.ces.ncsu.edu, that has all kinds of recovery resources. The second is NC State Extension has a YouTube channel. And on that YouTube channel, there are 12 different videos related to flood cleanup. So some is related to your home, some is related to food safety, stress, those kinds of things. And then the third thing is HUD has an app that you can get on Android or iPhone that's called Rebuild Healthy Homes, that talks about different steps.
I want to thank you, Sarah Kirby at NC State, Lonnie Crum at East Carolina University, and thank you for listening. Our partner stations, WHQR, WFSS, WFAE, Blue Ridge Public Radio, and WUNC, which is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.